Esa Schmidt, I do believe, has got a presentation on Finnish war heroes, which has been much asked for. We have quite a few Finns in the chat room, and they've been asking for some time that he would do a presentation on war heroes from Finland. So I believe he's got a presentation on that, and also some final quotes from Admiral Donitz. Is that right, Schmidt?
Yes, that is correct. But it's going to be about one particular soldier, a sniper that I'm going to talk about. And then there's something, if people are curious as to how Evalion is doing, I was able to contact her and I asked her for a statement, how she was. And if I may, I'm going to read it. It's quick. She says, "I'm doing fine. The last week has been extremely stressful and upsetting for me. I plan to take a little break, a little bit of a break from YouTube, a vacation so I could read and learn more, practice my German and strengthen my relationships with people I didn't have enough time to talk to while I was busy working on YouTube. I will return to YouTube under a different name, but to avoid getting shoar, I won't tell Twitter, so you guys will have to find me." So yeah, if people don't know, Evalion's channel, which we interviewed her some weeks ago, her channel was shut down by YouTube.
Yeah, I saw
that. There's a few videos, but I've been attacking her as well since.
There's about four or five, I think. I think there was someone called Leafy that was calling for her to get shut down. It does happen. As soon as people get to hear what you're saying, when you're speaking the truth, especially if it's about Jews, then people will be calling for you to be shut down. And YouTube are notorious for that. They really are. I mean, think of how many times Dennis has been shut down and how many times the whole documentary has been removed.
Yeah.
With millions of views. So, and all she can do really is just get a new channel. I mean, that's all you can do, really. Go through a proxy server, get a new channel, and get your stuff back up there. It's a shame that she'll lose all her subscribers. But she has got loads of publicity from doing this, I think. And just before it happened, I think there was a massive increase in subscribers. She's definitely getting well-known among nationalists anyway. So, thanks for that, Schmidt. And who is the war hero that you've got for us tonight?
Well, I'm going to, if I may, read some quotes that I forgot to mention last time when we were talking about Karl Dönitz. He said this at the very end of the war in May 1945. "The true community of the folk that National Socialism has created must be preserved. The manners of the parties as before 1933 must not take over again." So keep in mind, this is after all the destruction that they put over Germany, the Allied countries. And after all that, he still stands with National Socialism, I guess because he experienced the Weimar period and what came before. I find that is interesting. And then in March of 1944, he held a speech at a rally. And he said, "What would have become of our country today if the Führer had not united us under National Socialism? Divided along party lines, beset with the spreading poison of Jewry, and vulnerable to it because we lacked the defense of our present uncompromising ideology, we would have long since succumbed under the burden of this war and delivered ourselves to the enemy who would have mercilessly destroyed us." So I think we can see he was also wise to the Jewish question, but that's not a surprise as he lived in these times. So I'm going to talk about a very special soldier, a Finnish soldier, and I'm going to have to add a disclaimer first, even though I actually found a clip where a Finn pronounces the name of this man. I'm by no means sure I will get this right. The names of the places will probably also be butchered by me. Apologies in advance. I will try to pronounce his last name once and then call him by his first name, Simo. Otherwise, I would have to stop each time and try to remember that Finnish voice from the clip. So here it goes. Simo Hauva. the Finns in the chat room may be rolling on the floor now laughing, but it's the best I can do. So Simo was born on December the 17th, 1905, in a small village in the Rautjärvi municipality, close to the border with Russia. He was used to hard work from early childhood on his parents' farm. And later he spent a lot of time in the Finnish wilderness hunting. The skills he developed there during that time would later serve him well. At the age of 20, he joined the Finnish army for his 1 year of mandatory service, which he left with the rank of corporal. Soon after that, however, Simo volunteered to join the Finnish National Guard, known as the White Guard in the Anglosphere, because they had been fighting for the nationalistic so-called whites against the communist reds in the Finnish Civil War of 1918. During his time there, he received a great deal of training, which included, of course, target shooting. But even in his spare time, he would very often spend time outdoors trying to improve his skills with his rifle. His first rifle was a Russian-built Mosin Nagant M91 bolt-action rifle, but later he used a Finnish-made version of this rifle, designed by the White Guard, designated M2130. Its internal magazine can hold 5 shots. It is somewhat shorter than the Russian-built original, which is partly why Simo liked to use it, as he himself was 1.60 meters tall. That's 5'3" for those using the other system. But it was definitely a good rifle. Modern tests have shown it to be very accurate. Reportedly, his home was full of trophies from marksmanship competitions. It is said that he was eventually able to hit a target that was 150 meters or 500 feet away 16 times per minute. In 1939, on the 30th of November, the Soviet Union invaded Finland. As Simo was with the National Guard, he was called into service. He fought at the so-called Battle of Kolla, where he was with the 6th Company of the JR-34 Infantry Regiment. JR stands for Jäger, the German word for hunter. The Jäger movement stems from World War I, where Finnish volunteers were trained in Germany as Jäger, elite light infantry, to support Finland in its struggle to become a sovereign state. The 6th Company was under the command of Arne Edvard Juutilainen, nicknamed the Terror of Morocco because he had served in the French Foreign Legion. And curiously, I've actually mentioned his brother before when we were talking about Hans Ulrich Rudel. Back then I mentioned the Wikipedia list of the most successful fighter pilots of World War II and how the first few pages consist of Germans only, until there finally comes a Finn. Well, that was his brother, Ilmari Juutilainen. This Battle of Kolla was not a matter of a day or a few days. It lasted from December the 7th, 39, until the very end of the war on March the 13th, 1940, the so-called Winter War. The Finns were very heavily outnumbered. The Soviets fired an estimated 40,000 artillery rounds at the Finnish defense line each day, while the Finnish artillery could retaliate with 1,000 rounds per day at the very most. The Soviets also had a tank brigade and massive air superiority. A famous quote has since entered the Finnish national conscience. Major General Haglund asked Juutilainen, "Will Kolla hold?" To which Juutilainen replied, "Kolla will hold unless the orders are to run away." This question and the reply have become symbolic for the Finnish people as an expression of their ability to persevere and steel their resolve, even when faced with extremely unfavorable circumstances. To deal with such unfavorable odds, the Finns came up with creative tactics. One of these they called Moti. It refers to allowing troops to pass and then to encircle them. Armored columns were cut into several parts when they were moving on long and narrow forest roads. They sometimes achieved this by felling large trees. The Finnish soldiers were able to quickly move the forest on skis or snowshoes, and if they managed to isolate a few enemy units, like a few armored personnel carriers, they would all concentrate on these, attacking from all sides. If that was not possible because, for example, they were facing tanks and did not have any anti-tank weapon with them, they would simply keep them contained, let them use up their supplies, their food, their ammo. Some of the larger isolated pockets actually lasted until the end of the war. They could not be destroyed by the Finns because they were supplied by air by the Soviets. These were still tactical victories as the Soviet units were rendered more or less harmless. There was a famous battle within the context of this larger battle called Killer Hill, where 32 Finns faced 4,000 Soviet attackers. After several days and having lost 400 men, the Soviets turned their attention to another target. Only 4 of the Finns survived, but they held the hill until the very end. But back to Simo. He soon started to take his toll on the Soviet infantry, killing an average of 5 soldiers each day. It is, of course, impossible to say for certain how many he killed during the 100 days he was in action. Some of his adversaries he killed with a submachine gun, as he was at times also engaged in close combat against the Soviets. Even though he could have used a scoped sniper rifle, he preferred to use his trusty Mosin Nagant with the standard issue iron sights. There were several reasons for this. As he explained in an interview when he was well into his 90s, and one of those I've already mentioned, it's a relatively short length. He also said that a scoped rifle would have forced him to raise his head a bit higher, which could have made the difference between life and death. Amazingly, even with only the iron sights, he often hit his targets at 400 meters distance or more. Additionally, he said he had always used iron sights and was simply used to them. And scopes can also give away the position of a sniper because they can reflect sunlight. During the war, he also came up with several tricks that helped him stay undetected. He would scout for suitable locations for him to take up position in advance. Simo prepared these locations, for example, by using water to turn the snow at his hideout to ice, and this would prevent dusty snow from giving away his location when he fired. He also, as a rule, prepared 2 shooting positions so he could change from one to the other and continue shooting. When he was about to shoot, he put a piece of snow into his mouth to prevent steam forming and giving away his position. On the 21st of December, Simo was able to kill 25 Soviet soldiers in one day. In February, Simo was told that his good friend and neighbor and fellow sniper had been shot dead by a Soviet sniper. Simo only said, "That Russian has made a huge mistake. He shouldn't have done that." He asked for the precise location where his friend had been shot, took his rifle and went to that place. He waited for hours until finally he spotted a head in the distance, 300 meters away. He was certain it was the sniper who had killed his friend. After a few moments of observing, he shot the Soviet sniper. Simo had not only become famous in Finland during the war, with soldiers writing home to their families or their girlfriends that they had actually seen him. But he had become a terror for the Red Army. They started calling him the White Death. All their counter-snipers failed. They even used artillery strikes against him, but to no avail. Except they did manage to char his white coat a little, on one occasion. But then, on the 3rd of March, the Soviets started a very large offensive against the Finnish front line. Simo was one of the defenders. In close combat, the Finns fought extremely bravely. In the end, however, they were overwhelmed. Simo is said to have killed 40 enemies that day, but these remain unconfirmed, due to the chaos of battle, I would assume. A retreat was ordered. Simo, one of the last to leave his post, turned around for one more shot, but right then he was hit right in the face by an exploding bullet. But he did not die. He woke up in a hospital 1 week later, the very same day the Winter War had ended. So after Field Marshal Mannerheim promoted him from corporal to second lieutenant, a thing unheard of in Finland from what I read. To go from corporal to second lieutenant and without any officer training. It took Simo many years to recover from his wound. Several operations were necessary, of course. Nonetheless, he made a full recovery, aside from his disfigured face. He became a successful moose hunter and dog breeder. Urho Kekkonen, the president of Finland, went on a hunting trip with him in later days. When asked in the late 90s how he had become such a good marksman, Simo replied, "Practice." When he was asked whether he regretted killing so many people, he said, "I only did my duty and what I was told to do as well as I could." And somewhere I read that he was also asked what he felt when he was shooting an enemy. He laconically replied, "Recoil." I'm done for today. Thank you for listening.
Yeah, that's I've heard of the Winter War before. Hanni Karanen spoke a bit about that, I think, in Aryan Insights that I did with him. I think they actually managed to get the Russians to back down at the end of that war. And I think what's interesting about that is the fact that the president then went hunting with this heroic Finn. And if you compare that to the way that the heroic Latvians were treated, or the heroic Lithuanians or Estonians that fought against the Russians, I mean, after the war, you know, they weren't able to be honoured. And even today, they're still not able to really honour their fallen heroes from that war, because the Soviet Union complain about it. And yet here you've got a Finn that was doing the same, defending his country from the Soviets, and yet he's still held up as a hero. So there's some sort of discrepancy there between the way that the people that fought against the Soviet Union are treated. And you can't really say that the other groups, like the ones in Latvia and Lithuania, had Waffen-SS, because Finland was quite closely tied in with the National Socialist regime as well. I mean, they've had close to fascist regimes themselves, and they were fighting with the Waffen-SS at times, and as I say, they were allied with the NSDAP. So I find it interesting, just this, the difference between the way that they're treated from the ones other ones in Eastern Europe that fought against the Soviets. And that's quite a massive kill count, really, when you think about it. Was it five a day that was his average, were you saying, Schmidt?
Yes, the numbers vary a bit. The lowest I've seen was 200, but that is rarely ever mentioned. That seems way too low. And in the German Wikipedia article, they speak of 700, and I based that number of five average on that number.
They were massively outnumbered, absolutely massively outnumbered in that Winter War. They did incredibly to hold the Russians off. There's a lot of people thanking you in the chat room for that as well, Schmidt. Dennis, would you like to comment on that at all? Have you got any comments you'd like to make on that?
It's true what you're saying about Finland, such a tiny nation, like who managed to beat off the Soviet Union and managed after the war to stay out of under their umbrella communism. It was really a heroic feat, so to speak. I think Finland was also, I think Hitler was in on a meeting, correct me if I'm wrong, with the Russian right-hander star, Molotov. And after that meeting, I think Hitler said he came away and he said he knew after the reactions to certain questions by Molotov that there were going to be a war. There's no other outcome. So, very, you know, it's unique in the way they fought him off, but also unique in the way that Hitler realised that World War II was imminent.
And I think Finland played a role in the breakup of the Soviet Union as well. The dissidents would meet in Helsinki. Finland was never absorbed by the Soviet Union, but it was sort of in between the East and the West. And the Nordic resistance, they seem to be the main group there now, and also Sons of Odin. But there's definitely a healthy nationalist feeling in Finland. It's one of the stronger nationalist countries, I would say, that's in the North and the West, and not part of the East. Possibly the strongest for nationalist sentiment. They've got a big forum there called the Hammer Forum, and it doesn't expose the Jew or anything like that, but it does expose immigration, and apparently that's, you know, half the country goes on to this Hammer Forum. And also MV Lefty, the alternative news site which covers immigration and exposes the Holo hoax, that's as viewed as much as the mainstream media is. And I think the Finnish government have actually tried to extradite the guy behind this alternative media from Spain. You know, that's how seriously they take it. But there's definitely a real healthy nationalist feeling in Finland. Yeah, that was great, Schmidt. As I say, I know that the listeners in the chat room, especially the ones from Finland, saying that was amazing, and thank you very much. I can hear babies there in the background. Who's that?
Yeah. Hang on, I'll just kill my mic for now.
I was just going to ask you to talk a bit about your next part on communism by the back door, Dennis. But I better let you go and do a bit of grandfather sitting there. He's probably got a baby. He's just crawled into the studio.
I have some information.
It's a quiet area, which helps.